Friends with Brews?
Peter.
Scott, I'm surprised you remember me.
You know, the funny thing about that background is your hairstyle is changing as much as Theo's.
But if I was Theo, I would hold the microphone up to my mouth and talk like that, so to make sure you got all the pops and explosions.
And distortion, yeah.
Yes. I saw someone else do that, too. So.
Well, a lot of people hold the DJI mics. They all hold them. Everybody holds them, and I don't understand why, but most people don't blow them into distortion like Theo was doing.
Yeah.
Instead of just clipping it on. It doesn't... Good old, wait. Yeah. It doesn't just... Wait, it just... Oh.
And it just works.
But it doesn't.
By the way, yes, go.
The mix volume there, did that sound clip sound about roughly equivalent to the volume of my voice?
Pretty close. About,
okay, good enough. Good.
He was slightly louder than you, but
yeah, well, that's Theo for you. He's slightly louder than Scott Wilsey. That's my review of him. Slightly louder than me.
Fair enough.
So, he's smarter than me.
It's been a minute since we've recorded.
It has been a while. I don't know if you've noticed from our Friends with Brews YouTube channel, but I did put up the two bar hopping videos of us from my trip to the East Coast.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Excellent. And they've gotten about 5 views. Some of our shorter ones have gotten quite a bit of views, though. People like seeing you in a tub. I'll just throw that out there.
They like seeing me drink the world's worst coffee. I'm sorry, the number 3 best coffee in the world.
Yeah, and the one short that I had of myself drinking a beer got way more views than any of the ones I've done of me drinking coffee. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, anyway. The robot, the one where you were trying to get them to brew you a drink via a dead robot, that one got quite a bit of views.
Yep.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm thirsty because I've been waiting for a long time to drink my new brew.
I wonder why. Whoa, you've got a can and a cup.
I do. It was keeping it cooler.
All right, talk about your brew, my friend.
So this is a return brewery, but a new brew. This is Athletic Brewing Company's Athletica Mexican Style Copper.
Ooh, that sounds good. Wait, does this make you athletic?
No, but drinking it won't necessarily make me not athletic.
Ah, as opposed to every other beer.
Yep, pretty much.
I gotta say, okay, before you review this, I have to say Athletic Brewing Company has staged a huge turnaround in the eyes of Peter Nicolaitis. Do you remember the first one you had and how bad you hated it and you couldn't understand why anyone would ever drink from them?
It definitely tasted like regret, but things have changed. First off, I tried a different brews from them, and those were sort of like the gateway brews into others. Let's see what happens. It's a pretty heady pour, though.
I was going to say, that is some serious foam.
As with most things, Athletic Brewing Company, it tastes kind of like a beer.
Okay. What kind of beer does it taste like, almost?
It tastes kind of like a cerveza. It's a little, you know, like a copper lager kind of thing. It's a little watery. Maybe it's the pour. I don't remember it feeling this watery last time I had one. But, you know, if you're going for something that tastes like a beer, this tastes like a beer.
Okay.
It is not offensively hoppy. And, you know, it's got some beer-like taste to it. I recently only found out, because I've been watching the World Cup at a local sports bar a lot, because every 4 years I become, you know, a soccer fan.
Right.
And, you know, they've got all the brews and they list all of their ABVs. And I never really realized that, like, the difference between regular beer and light beer in America is about 1%, if that.
Really?
Because, like, light beers are, like, 4 to 4.2%. Regular beers are, like, 4.5 to 5-point-something percent.
Yeah, but the light beers usually are less calories. Like, sometimes half the calories, maybe-ish.
This one, on that note, this is a 60-calorie brew, right?
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, their Athletic Light, which I believe I have reviewed on this show before. Actually seems to have more flavor than this at the moment, but maybe it's just a weird memory. I don't know. But anyway, you know, would I drink it again? This is like the fourth one of these that I've had. Not today, but yes, I would drink this again.
Speaking of, I believe I've covered that on the show before. When we get to talking about our projects, remind me that I want to cover that specific thing. What have I said on Friends with Brews? Because I have a project I'm working on to help with that.
All right.
And by the way, I'm going to drink a non-athletic beer, but I am standing in tree pose right now, although you can't see my legs.
I will join you in tree pose. I am also standing in tree pose right now.
Very good. All right. I am having a Sapporo.
The Japanese beer made in brewed in Italy.
Oh, my wife looks at me so disgustedly whenever I say Oriental. I mean, people used to say that. I believe that within the last 3 years, I've actually heard someone say Oriental, and they meant it. Like, I don't know who they were or how hard they hit their head.
One of my favorite Dungeons and Dragons books when I was a kid was Oriental Adventures.
Yes.
And it had a picture of, I've got to double check, it's a ninja on foot going up against a samurai, I think on like a Kirin, speaking of, you know, speaking of beers. Yeah.
Yeah. I also have Kirin, which I might go get if I drink this. I'm going to need it after my adventures with my camera today. So anyway, this is a Sapporo. It is a Japanese beer. It says, discover the perfectly balanced taste that's irresistible to all. Irresistible to all. I'll give this to my daughter. She's not of age yet, but it says irresistible to all. All right, I'm going to open this. I'm going to pour into my Powell's Books Portland cup. It's a Portland cup, Peter. I'm tilting at an angle so that I won't foam it all up like Peter did.
Maybe that's why it's so watery. I used up all the bubbles, all the carbonation on the bubbles.
Oh, I was going to ask you, how do you compare it on the water scale to Guinness?
This one tastes comparably watery to a Guinness NA.
So what would you describe the Japanese beers as? They're basically lagers, right?
Yeah, I think they remind me of like Pilsners. Usually slightly more bitter.
Yes.
Than what I'm used to.
Yeah. Right. Now, the Kirin is a little more citrusy, but I've decided that I kind of like the neutral taste of the Sapporo, and Asahi and Sapporo taste a lot the same to me. Mm. But here goes my Sapporo. Yeah, I buy these at Uwajimaya now because I can buy 12 packs and 6 packs, or 12 pack, 18. I can buy the huge packs, whatever they are.
Cool.
But when I used to just run over for a single can here and there at... not Whole Paycheck, but the other one, New Seasons. The lady said to me, yeah, those are a good beer just to have in general because they're kind of neutral. And I'm like, yeah, they're very non-offensive. You won't ever regret having this beer. It may not be your favorite beer. It may not be the best beer for all circumstances, but this is a beer that you can always rely on to be just a good beer. And I will say that this kind of lighter beer is really good in the summer.
So it doesn't taste like regret.
It doesn't taste like regret. This is 4.9% alcohol. And yeah, I like Sapporo. Now, when I was in Japan, whenever I went to all the restaurants, I always wound up having Asahi or Sapporo. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a lot of Kirin in the restaurants, but I was buying the Kirin in the konbini, the convenience stores, the 7-Elevens, if you will. But anyway, this is a Sapporo. I give it another... And I not only have I had it before, not only am I having it now, but I will have it again, Peter. I will. You can't stop me. Stop stopping me. Stop.
I'm not trying to stop you.
Okay. That's not very Theo-like. You're definitely not Theo. I take it all back.
I'm sorry your beer is and I'm sorry mine is too.
Do I have that? Oh, I do. Here we go.
I'm sorry your software is and I'm sorry mine is too.
You're gonna love this. Guess what? So remember the issues I was having with backups on my MacBook?
I do.
And how I cleared all kinds of crap out and was able to recover like a half terabyte of my terabyte hard drive space?
Yep.
I'm back down to 17 gigabytes free right now. And Parachute backup has not been running, which tells me that it once again is got to be Arc.
So you may have a MacBook, but you don't have a backbook because you can't back it up.
I've got no book. I've got a closed book at this rate. I need to...
Do you know what you remind me of with those free space numbers? You remind me of a guy I know named Jacob who's constantly running out of disk space.
I have twice as much as I need. And look, I stopped Arc and I got 20 gigs back already.
Peter scared me.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Now I got 40 gigs free. So all I did is I stopped the existing Arc backup and I'm just watching my, I've tripled my free space.
Peter, because you pointed out something that I didn't know and I don't understand this because I don't understand why everybody in the world isn't shitting their pants over it, which is Arc requires double the space of the items that it needs to back up because it needs to duplicate the entire thing to back it up. It's crazy. You have to have a 2 terabyte drive to back up a 1 terabyte drive.
But it doesn't even really still do it. Oh, now I'm up to 71 gigs of free space. I'm just watching the free space just climb.
I've never heard of anything so insane.
So
you're moving this off computer, right?
To the cloud, to our cloud.
Yeah, so why doesn't it just pump it straight to the cloud? Apparently it has to consolidate it into a neat little package.
Yeah. And then so I will say, there's an example. There is a time where I know where it makes sense where you do need to have double the space to do your backups. And that is with a backup and disaster recovery platform that I know you are familiar with. But if you look at things like the Barracudas or the Datto solutions where they have an on-prem backup, right?
Yes.
Where it's going to the cloud, but it also keeps a local backup.
Yeah.
And the reason, say you're backing up 1 terabyte of data total, they want you to have 2 terabytes of space because those boxes have the ability to spin up virtual machines. And you need a place to store those virtual or to run those virtual machines,
right?
Arc is not doing that. Arc ain't doing that.
As far as you know.
I'm pretty sure I've never seen an ability to spin up a virtual restore of an Arc machine.
Peter, it may not be spinning up the virtual machine for you. It may be spinning it up for the NSA. It may be spinning it up for some random Chinese hackers.
Now, here's the thing. I'm sorry.
I meant Oriental hackers.
Right, Oriental hackers. I'm still only at 71 gigs free, so this thing has still chewed up 400 gigs of space that I cannot account for.
Oh my Lord. I had
Claude debugging this for me a while ago, but I can't find the Claude code window where that happened.
Because you know why? Because it ran out of space and it deleted all of Claude's messages.
Speaking of Claude... At the time of this recording, Claude Fable has been extended to us for the second week in a row.
They keep extending it. Why? Because they don't have a comparable model to GPT 5.6 if they don't keep extending Fable 5.
Yeah. But in classic Anthropic fashion, I still have trouble authenticating to them. You pointed out to me that Claude Code now has its own browser. Built in?
It does. And if you use Claude Code in the app.
It has it in the terminal. I'm using it in CMUX, and when I typed /usage-credits so I could toggle from using my Claude Max account to API credits, it opened up a new tab and it popped up a Google authentication page for me to authenticate.
Oh, that might be, okay, that might be a CMUX-specific thing where it opens links in the browser. There is an option for that. You might want to check that.
Okay, I had never seen it, but until it was coincident when you mentioned it has a browser, and then boom, a browser showed up.
You might still be right, but just double check, because CMUX, I believe, does have an option for if I'm opening a web page link, open it in this app.
Okay, so that might be this. I might have conflated two things. Regardless, it didn't work. So I still had to copy the link, paste it into an actual Chrome browser, get the return off key and paste it back in.
Yep.
But coincident to me using up all of my Fable credits.
Mm-hmm. In 2.5 seconds?
It took a few days. I definitely got a lot out of it. And I will say, I agree with your initial take on Fable. It was fixing software bugs that Opus had just been spinning its wheels on for a long time.
The thing I found about Fable that's amazing is it just goes in and analyzes what's going on, and it is good at that. It's very good at going, oh, here's what's going on.
Yeah. So it did that with me, but I ran out of credits after a few days, and I was pretty much, I'd gotten almost all the Showstopper bugs and stuff done with my forthcoming KM switch coming out soon. Mm-hmm. And then I got that email, which I think you might have gotten the same email, saying, hey, a few months ago, we gave out $100 usage credits to people, and most people didn't actually use them, so you've still got $91 of usage credits. And I was like, well, that's funny, because I just burned through all of my Fable allowance under my max plan. So I'll go ahead and enable that. So I went into /usage-credits. I said, yep, use my API. And then nothing changed. But I was able to start working again. But I looked at my usage credits and the number's not going down. And a day went by and I had racked up, according to Fable, about a $100 bill in my console. So I'm like, did I just pay $100 of usage? And I even asked Claude, I was like, what's going on? How do I do this? They're like, oh, yeah, you look here. You should see this. You should see everything's fine. That number should go down. Make sure you turn this on. I'm like, I've done all these things. It's not moving. Oh, make sure you have your API key set. I'm like, yeah, I have an API key set. Yep. Oh, did you use usage credit? Yeah, I used usage credits. I pointed it at the API. And then today, after a couple of days, my available usage credits are down to like $1.81. So it was using them.
It just wasn't
took
updating.
Took the accounting, the accounting clods a little time to catch up to the fact.
Well, I gotta say, the accounting clods are pretty slow because months ago, I tried to buy my brother some extra usage. I actually tried to... What did I do? Oh, I just bought him a bunch of credits, that's all. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what happened, but they definitely charged me for the credits, but he had no way to actually use the credits. I don't remember what the exact scenario was. But anyway, he couldn't use the credits. So I filled out a thing saying, hey, I paid for these credits and my brother can't use them, so that's a waste of money. I want my money back. And it took them 3 months to respond. The funny thing is, in the meantime, it started working for him. He was able to use the credits, but they were so slow and stupid that they refunded me the money anyway. So not only did he finally get access to the credits, but then they finally responded to me going, yep, you're absolutely right. Here's your money. I was like, oh my God, I would actually bring this up and try to correct this, except you are so stupid and so late that I just think this is your problem, not mine. As Theo would say.
Do you understand?
Yes. Do you understand?
No, you do not understand.
So anyway, the accounting clods are dumb. But the programming clod is pretty good.
Yeah, but I think the accounting clod and the authentication clod are probably the same clod.
Yeah, probably the same clod.
And I think by that, I mean, it's a clod, a C-L-O-D. It's a dumb clod.
You know, anyway. Yeah,
so. Now, I've noticed recently, also before we leave Claude code sessions are synchronizing between the Claude app and whatever terminal I'm running them in.
Oh, they've always been doing that. They've been doing that for a long time. Yeah.
Okay, so I only...
In fact, I have... they've been doing that, and also I do have a third-party app that we've talked about before on this show that I'm running that shows my usage. Mm. It shows my session and weekly usage and when they reset. But yeah... Actually, Claude Code in the terminal and Claude the app itself are really good about showing that information now.
So that's helpful, except the conversation where I had Claude free up disk space with Arc, more than just the 71 gigs, that one's not showing up in my history anywhere.
Peter, you got to be careful with asking LLMs to free up disk space, and especially when your backup's not working. I showed you a post on X of this guy who, and by the way, I hate X. I agree with everybody who's right now going, my God, why? Because it's the only place that Anthropic posts, and it's the only place that some of the LLM people post. So basically what I try to do is I try to get a summary, and luckily my notifications, for some reason, just surfaces all of those people's posts, so I don't really have to look at X itself. Anyway... So this guy was running, he normally runs Claude Code, I guess. He was running GPT 5.6, because somebody at OpenAI asked him to test something and he was doing something, and it wiped out his Mac's home directory. But he had no backups, Peter. This guy does not back up his Mac in 2026. The easiest operating system, it comes with Time Machine built in, even if you just want the dumb Time Machine. You want a local version backup, you can get it for the cost of a drive. You don't have to know how to work any software. You don't have to know anything. And I just don't get it. But and then other backup solutions for any OS, even Linus probably, are so cheap and ridiculous, you know, by comparison to the cost of owning a computer, but certainly compared to the cost of having an LLM wipe out your home directory. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Why would you allow any LLM, you know, access beyond the, you know, having to ask for permission for each step? Why would you allow that if you don't have some backup mechanism? I constantly am putting Cloud Code into always allow mode, but I have tons of backups. I have multiple ways that my computer's backed up, both on-site and off-site.
I can imagine there are plenty of people who are 100% in AI we trust. It's God. We've made God.
But it's not just AI. They're trusting their hard drive will never fail. They're trusting somebody won't run away with their computer. They're trusting they won't dump it in the toilet. I don't know why they're using their laptop on the toilet, but I know they are. Anyway, they're trusting that all these things aren't going to happen, but these things do happen on a routine basis. They're trusting, hell, I watched a freaking tornado video from I don't remember what state the other night, and everybody's house just disappeared. They're trusting that won't happen. They're trusting a lot of things not to happen, Peter, and I just don't know how they can possibly know that those things aren't going to happen. How do they know? Tell me. Tell me how they know, Peter, because I want to be able to know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah,
what do you know?
No idea.
All right, you have a good list of things that you want to talk about today. Let's start talking about them because I'm interested in them.
So, a couple of grumpy things get out of the way too. Okay. I had to be landlording again for the last couple of days.
Why?
Because I got a text from the neighbors at my rental property saying, "Sounds like an alarm is going off." So I texted my tenants, and they're like, "Oh, we're out of town." I was like, "Well, sounds like it could be an emergency. I'm just giving you notice that I'm entering the premises." I get there.
That's better than if they would have just said, "We don't hear it," and not tell you that they're out of town.
I have had, are you ready to bleep me? Idiot tenants who would have done that stupid shit.
Yeah.
I have had people as tenants who were that stupid. So.
Yes.
The current tenants do not fall into that that category, thankfully.
They remember that they're out of town. Brilliant.
So, yeah, they told me that. So I go there, I open the door, and sure enough, the fire alarm is going off, and it's saying, "Fire, fire, evacuate." I'm like, okay, look around, no fire. I silence the thing, everything's good. Okay, great. I did notice, it smells a little funny in here, but it's just like their detergent or something, you know, so it smells different. So I was like, okay, I don't know. But I'm going to just turn the thermostat, just tell it to run the fan for the next 8 hours.
Yeah.
So I do. So I text them, I tell them that's what happened. They said, "Oh, yeah, that's happened like 3 or 4 times before." I'm like, okay. Now, some tenants are the type who will call the landlord at the drop of a hat. And others are the type who will never say anything, you know, and it'll be like, "Oh, yeah, maybe I should have told you that the roof was leaking, but I never bothered to. So that's why I'm withholding $2,000 from this month's rent check because my bed got ruined because the roof leaked all over it," or something like that. That sort of stuff has happened. Not to me personally, but I've, you know, firsthand experience with tenants like that. So I was like, okay, you know, the fire, life safety, that's the kind of thing you should tell me about. Like, you know, and these tenants, they've told me about like clogged drains, the water, the hot water nozzle not shutting off completely, you know, and a bunch of little things. So I was like, all right. So then I get an email from another one of the owners that their tenants are complaining. And they say, "Oh, the alarm's been going off all morning." Now, there was a while, this was an email, and I was like, I was there this morning and I silenced it. What time exactly is this happening? Mm-hmm. And then this morning, I get another text saying, yeah, it is making that noise again. Now, I went there when I made the second trip, because I did make a return trip. On my second trip, I pulled all of the units out of their sockets, right? I'm like, okay, the tenants are gone for like a week and a half, so it's not going to do any good anyway. So I physically unmounted all of the smoke alarms. So then I get a note saying, oh no, we still hear it. I'm like, okay. So I go, and sure enough, one of the units sitting on the floor is beeping. So at least the good news is now I know which one it is. So I push the button to silence it, remount the other two in the bedrooms, and I leave and I bring it back home. Meanwhile, I've emailed my electrician who installed these, and I was like, is this a warranty thing? Can you help me with this? You know, and I get no response. The unit's sitting on my countertop here at home, and it starts going off. Fire, fire! So I push the button to shut it up. A minute later, it goes off again. I'm like, what the hell? I push the button to shut it up. It gets to the point where unless I am holding the silence button, it's immediately going off. So at this point, I threw it in the refrigerator. I can still hear it. I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. Go downstairs, I get a screwdriver, and I flip the little, you know, permanently discharge and destroy this thing. And then I find out that, oh yeah, I can just call them up. So I call up the manufacturer. I'm on hold for a while. I take out the trash. I come back in. They're sending a replacement. Wonderful. But anyway, that was just adventures in landlording. It could have been worse, I guess, but it's just like, it's annoying. You know, these little things come up and, you know, like, I don't know. Sometimes I just want to sell my rental properties and just invest them in the S&P 500 and just, you know.
See, that's the thing. And these would be people that you consider good tenants.
But if they're gone,
right?
You know, they can't do anything about it. And what if this had happened when I was on vacation, you know, and like then I got to find someone else to come in and it's just, it's a hassle.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess what I was trying to say there was, can you imagine having to deal with that plus have terrible, you know, tenants?
Oh, I can imagine tenants saying, like, you know, like, yeah, it's beeping, and expect me to, like, you know, like, silence it for them every time and stuff.
How long does it take you to get over there from your place?
It's less than a mile away, so it's just a few, 5 minutes.
What else? Is that the only grumpy, or you got another grumpy?
I ordered a new Sonos, a new piece of Sonos gear for my Vermont house. Uh-huh. Because Sonos, they have this program where you can upgrade your old equipment for a 15% discount on new equipment. Hmm. And with the remodeling that I've got going on, I needed another amp, Sonos amp. And I got an email saying, for a limited time, we're doubling your upgrade credit from 15% to 30%. I was like, well, okay, sure. And since I'm planning to head up to Vermont, I was like, don't drop ship it to me. I will pick it up at the Best Buy in New Hampshire right along the way. Great. I do that. Order comes in. It says, great. You have until July 15th to pick it up. And I was like, I'm not going to be there by the 15th. I need one extra day. I call Best Buy. We can't help you with this, but you can change this at the Sonos.com website. I go to the Sonos. You cannot change this via the Sonos.com website. So I email Sonos support. I'm like, hey, here's what's going on. I can't make it. I need one extra day. They're like, we can't help you. We will automatically send it back. But what we can do is cancel that order and make a new one, and that will give you the additional time. I'm like, fine.
Sometimes the problems that can't be solved, out of all of the problems that humanity has ever encountered, are the dumbest things.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's a workaround, though, right? Like, why will... Because nobody programmed into the system an extend pickup date button. So instead, we'll just cancel this one and, you know...
But even, why can't they even just fool it by having some guy just hide it somewhere? And then, okay, fine, what are they going to do? What is the system going to do? The computer literally can't walk into the warehouse and pull it out.
Well, my suspicion is that Best Buy probably has a bunch of these in stock.
Yeah.
And so it's all just trading paper, just moving around.
Right.
You know,
they're
stuff.
Holding one for you. They wouldn't be holding one. Chances are it would still be there.
Right. But I'm not going to get my 30% discount if I just walk in off the street and buy that, you know?
Right. So. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, man.
That is anyway. So dumb.
So let's talk a little bit about what we are doing with Claude Code these days.
Yeah, nice.
What's your favorite project? And we don't have to go through all of them, but why don't we each take like our top three projects with Claude Code?
Well, I'm just going to talk about one.
Okay, let's talk about our top one projects with Claude Code.
And then I'll give you the floor. I'm not going to give you the name, but the short name is VOB. And what VOB is, the reason I'm not giving you the name is because...
I can't get that song out of my freaking head.
Sorry. The reason why is because I want the name to... I may use this name. I may put this... I may, you know, offer this for a very low price. Anyway, what this is it's a voice transcription app. And yes, everybody does voice transcription apps. This is one that runs on the Mac. It also runs on iOS. And the thing that's different about this is that I get to choose my models, which is obvious for me, but if I make this available to other people, they get to choose their models. So you plug in your own API key. Now, why would you do this, you ask? Because I was using Whisperflow, and Whisperflow was causing me money. It was costing me, I don't know, $150 a year, I don't remember. I started using it when my hand was broken, when my tendon was broken. And I thought to myself, would it be cheaper? There were other reasons too. There were a couple things I didn't like about it. I really hated the keyboard in the iOS app for making corrections, which ironically, mine doesn't have a keyboard. What it does have is it has the little transcription thing, and then it shows you the latest transcription. So if you want, you can just paste them into something real quick. But from there, it's a quick tap away to the real keyboard, which is a much more satisfying experience for making any corrections. So I've actually kind of liked that approach. I thought it would be annoying, but I actually really like it better than Whisperflow's. But anyway, the point is, I'm using 11labs Scribe V2 as my model. It's pennies per month. Even if I transcribe many messages per day, it just does not add up.
Yep.
So just in terms of cost alone, I'm saving money. But then the other benefit is I get to make the UI the way I want it. I get to make the dictionary the way I want it. I get to make the transcriptions the way, I get to handle the pre-processing. Like I have things that say, get rid of false starts. Well, it does that in two different stages. It sends, the 11labs model has the ability to do some of that, but there's also some of that locally if it comes back and it's not happy with what 11labs did. So I have control over... the ability to make that stuff as good or bad as I want, So that's why I made this. And in addition to the cost, it gives me the features that I want. And I just like the way this works on my Mac and iOS better. I was finding that with Whisperflow, when I would trigger it on the Mac, there would be a delay before I could... over time, there would be a delay before I could start talking. And it started driving me insane. And so what I would do is I would quit the app, clear a bunch of stuff out, start up again. I would get rid of the delay for a while, but the delay would always come back. And I don't want to have to manage the app. I don't want to have to just random, I don't want to have to remember, I need to quit the app today so that I can,
So far,
I haven't had, huh?
You mean like with my backups?
With your MacBook, yeah, your MacBook Pro. So far, I haven't had that problem with this app. So yeah, that's my project, VOB, and I'm possibly gonna put that one up for sale. Which you may have, you may have opportunity to talk about selling apps here in a minute. I don't know, but anyway, let's hear about your project. Oh, the other project I am going to work on is for you and me. I'm going to make a vector database for all of the stuff that we've done on Friends with Brews, so that we can search and find related things and so on and so forth. And because it's going to have an API, we can search it on the website on a separate search page, but also we will be able to just point our LLMs at it and say, hey, Claude, tell me what I, so that'll be pretty cool. So you'll be able to say, I just need a reminder if I've ever talked about this before, and you can have Claude go look for you. You don't have to go search for yourself. For example.
So I can type my query into Claude instead of typing my query into the search page?
Yeah, exactly. But Claude can worry about the details. And, I used to think that people using LLMs for search was stupid. But using a good LLM for search is actually not stupid at all. It's actually quite helpful.
So my project that I'm working on is, it's going to be the flagship project, product perhaps, of scratchitchsoftware.com. Mm-hmm. My new little, this thing has, Vibe Coding has unleashed so many new little projects. The flagship product, though, is called AcrossKM because it is a keyboard mouse sharing program that lets you move the mouse across multiple displays on multiple computers. And what people might often say is like, but can't you already do that? Like, yeah, if you have a Mac, you have two Macs, and you're in the same iCloud account or in the same Apple ID, by default, you can share the keyboard and mouse across them. That's one use case, which is kind of cool. But if you have a Windows machine, you can't do that. And if you have two Macs without linking the same iCloud account, for example, one for work, one for personal, you can't do that. And if you have two Windows machines, you can't do that all out of the box. So AcrossKM is a simple program to fix that. I've been developing it very actively and aggressively, thanks to Claude, for some time now. And it is just about ready for release. So I don't know if it's going to be released by the time this episode drops, but hopefully shortly after. So that's the flagship product. I'm also going to release a couple of very tiny little utilities, fairly cheap. Some might be free. One is called CMD Tab, and it is a direct competitor to the program Alt Tab, because Alt Tab used to have a free version and a paid version. I'm not opposed to paying for software, but they, in my opinion, completely botched the move to paid, and they changed settings. So like the things that I had that were working suddenly went away, and the settings were just trashed. And of course it happened at the least convenient time when I was using this program aggressively. So I, in a fit of frustration, Vibe coded a replacement to it.
You rage vibed.
And I rage coded. And mine works better now. It's actually faster than Alt-Tab. It doesn't do as much.
It is very good. It is very good.
Yeah, it doesn't do as much, but it never intended to. My use case was really simple, right? The default in macOS is Command and Tab moves you from whatever, it basically moves you through, gives you the option to move through all of the active application windows. What Alt-Tab did was give me the option, and I chose Option. If I click Option Tab, it will move through the active windows of the active application. Sorry, it'll move through the windows of the application. So for instance, multiple Chrome windows open, you could do Option Tab, and that will go and move through browser to browser. So Command Tab right now, as it stands, CMD Tab, it does one thing. It makes it so that when you hit Option Tab, you cycle through the windows of the active application.
Well, you say, all oh, that's right. Yes. Yep. You're right.
And that's all it does right now, right?
So that's it. You're right.
So yeah. So I find that is hilariously functional for me. So, but I'm probably going to sell that for like a couple of bucks. I also made one called Mute, which I think I'm going to actually call it FN Mute, which you can pronounce FN Mute. This is a replacement for the app called Shush, which I bought in the App Store, and I keep getting notifications saying support for Intel-based Mac software is going away, and I got sick of seeing that every time I booted my machine and Shush would load, so I replaced it. So now I have FN Mute. And the intention there is when you press the FN key, or another key if you choose something else, if you go away from the default FN key, it will just mute. So it's like a push to talk or a push to silence. So it's the cough button. And those are a few of the commercial software that I will be putting up on Scratch Itch Software real soon now. I'm also making some Foundry virtual tabletop modules.
Ooh.
To enhance gameplay in Savage Worlds on Foundry. So
are you
really
sell those for people that like to enhance their gameplay?
I'm trying to decide, because it seems like most of the for sale stuff on Foundry isn't add-on modules that change behavior or enhance performance. It seems like people are only charging money mostly for maps and other content. So like porting books into Foundry, so instead of having the PDF or a physical copy, you can access all of the rules and everything in there, or layouts and maps and things like that, or tokens, you know, like little figurines and things. I don't see people charging for a lot of this stuff, so I might just put those up there and just leave them as, you know, like evidence of, you know, like cred, street cred. Look, you know, I can do other cool things, right? And you know, scratch an itch somewhere and see what happens. So
the gamers are not at all like rich CEO biohackers, because those people are paying millions of dollars for things that will enhance performance and change behavior.
Okay.
By the way, I want to tell you, I forked your command tab, or whatever you call it. What is it called?
Does Anna know?
I forked your command tab app.
Wow, you admitted it twice. Okay.
And I put some of the features in that Alt-Tab has, which is namely the screenshot view, like the picture view of the different windows. And so I can do either. And right now I have it in the vertical list view, so it just shows the icon. But if you just kind of hover on that for a second, it shows you the pictures of all the windows that are available for that app. And you can just arrow over and choose which one of those you want to open. But cool. I got to say, yeah, the performance is so much better than Alt-Tab. The basic app that you had is so performant. It's so great. I have just been loving that. The fact that you developed that makes me happy every day, because I'm using that app, even though Woo-hoo. I made some changes to it. I'm your first testimonial, Peter.
Dear listeners, I haven't figured out how to do this yet, but I assume it's possible for me to make coupon codes. I'll be distributing these programs via Lemon Squeezy. That's the marketplace. They're going to handle
all of the tax calculations. You just made fun of me for saying forked, and now you're going around talking about Lemon Squeezy.
I didn't name it, and I didn't do it. So,
but you didn't.
I'm going to be distributing via Lemon Squeezy, because they handle all of the sales tax, the VATs, the you know country things. They're the merchant of record for all that kind of crap, which is great. I'm assuming they have a facility for me to put a discount code into it. So what I'm saying, dear listener, if you are interested in any of the software that I have mentioned that's going to be on Scratch Itch software, whether it's Across KM or Command Tab, F and Mute, or any of these Foundry modules, drop us a line. Scott will tell us how to contact us. But if you contact me and just ask for a discount code, I promise you, when I figure out how to make one, you will be the first to get it.
He will ask. Well, actually, when Claude figures out how to make one, you will be the first to get one.
Darn right.
So if you want to have Peter squeeze your lemon for cheap, let him know. And there goes Peter's fake beer. Product.
I am done with my beer. Okay.
Yeah, so. I'm going to miss Fable when it's gone. I've been having a lot of fun just doing this and then work-related stuff, where it's just, it still takes time. It still talks too much. It still overanalyzes stuff. Sometimes I wish these LLMs would quit trying to be engineers and just be more of a technician. Here's what I want to achieve. I don't give a shit about the philosophy. And they always are like, but here's what I honestly want to flag about this. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, you're bringing up stuff. You're acting like this is an emergency, and it's just not. They do that too much. But the ability of Fable to just look at something and analyze what's going on is really freaking good. Such a huge step over Opus.
Yep. I totally agree. It's night and day. I'm really curious, you know, to see, like, how the latest ChatGPT for coding compares to it. And frankly, if you know, if it's supposed to be on par with Opus or with Fable, and I can't use Fable anymore, I might have to go take a look at it.
I've seen a few different people that we would follow and trust say that it's not quite the same, that Fable still feels like a bigger bottle to them, bigger in the terms of its knowledge and its capability for doing some of these things. But those are way closer than Opus is. So if we get the rug pulled out from under us, yeah, I may, as much as I don't like OpenAI and as much as I feel the same nausea in my stomach to use OpenAI as I do to use X.
Yep.
It may happen. Now, Theo, I think, put out a video in which he made himself ill by proving that GPT 5.6 was better in the Claude Code harness than it was the way that OpenAI wants you to use it. So there is possibilities for something like that. You can modify, you can set up your Claude Code to use different models. And anyway, that's an option, so that you could still have your familiar Claude Code harness. You could still have all your rules and stuff in place, but then you could get the benefit of a better model if for some reason we're not able to use Fable for a while.
Yeah, and I don't think I have a ton invested in Claude Code. You know, I haven't, like, I've tweaked a couple of things here and there, and I have Claude.md files, and I have a status bar configured. But other than that, there's not a lot holding me to it, right? So most of my stuff, I should be able to just say, hey, ChatGPT, pick up and, you know, pick up development where we left off on this.
Got a lot of MCP. Not, I try to use as few MCP servers as possible because they have a lot of overhead. But I have some command line stuff. I have some skills. I have some other things where I'd have to say, okay, transfer this over, unless I was using it within Claude Code. So, if I was gonna do that, I probably actually right now would look at the only thing that it would come down to is using the app itself. Like aside from the terminal stuff, I would have to use the Codex app, which has gotten really weird right now, and a lot of people are complaining about what OpenAI did to it because they made it even more confusing than ever before.
Apparently Codex is now the ChatGPT app.
Yeah, and people can't get just a popping up a ChatGPT app normally is just like a side window, and they're all their chats are, I don't know, people are unhappy. Anyway,
well, speaking of unhappy, I have a little York schnoodle. A Yorkie Schnauzer poodle mix who wants to go out. So I have a feeling if I drag this out any longer, he's going to be unhappy, and then I will be unhappy.
And your cows will be unhappy.
Exactly. So we should wrap this up. So tell us, in addition to scratchitchsoftware.com, where can they find us and our work, or at least my work?
By the way, okay, so that site may or may not be live by the time this comes out. It depends, but I've got it kind of working, but I need to...
Coming soon.
I need to talk to you about how it works, because... Anyway, we'll talk about all that later. Yeah, so that will be a thing soon. Friendswithbrews.com is the website where you can get the audio edition of this podcast, as well as links to the YouTube version. We have a Friends with Brews YouTube channel, which is linked to on friendswithbrews.com. And we have show notes, we have transcripts, we have blah, 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 especially the blah, blah, blah. And don't forget...
Tell your friends!
And, yeah, any complaints should be directed towards Peter. Any praise should be directed towards Claude, I guess, based on this episode. And anyway, yeah, here's the thing. I just want to say in summary regarding this vibe coding thing. First of all, you and I know enough that we're able to direct... It helps if you have an idea, you have a plan, you know how something should work. And then you can get really good results from these things. But when I hear the guys on The Verge saying, oh, I just don't know what I just don't understand why they don't know. They can't figure out what they want to use it for. And it's like, I have never had so many things, so many utilities, so many tools that I have wanted to build that now I can do. And that I'm constantly coming up with new ideas for something because it's so easy. There is no barrier to entry anymore just to build me a tool for myself to do this. And that kind of thing is amazing. You don't have to write software that's going to support an enterprise. You don't have to write even necessarily software that you're going to support for other people if you don't want to. But for tools for yourself, it's an incredible, you know, and I, aside from all the other shouting about AI, aside from all the downsides, I'm just talking about this one aspect. This is a real legitimate aspect that, you know, I don't understand why so many people are like, I don't know what to do. It's like, to me, that's like a teenager being bored all the time. It's the same.
I didn't know what to do until I felt the itch, right? And when stuff started breaking, like for me, it was Share Mouse, which was my previous keyboard mouse sharing thing, breaking on me for the... I don't know how manyth time, but I just got sick of it, and I had opened up a support ticket with the developer, and it was the standard, here's your standard troubleshooting list, which you've already tried half a dozen times, and it never fixes, and the program just, I've used it for years, and without fail, it'll work, and then for, like, suddenly, some months down the road, it just stops working. nothing changes on my part, right? It's not my antivirus, it's not my networking, it's not a new computer, it just stops working. And the developer is completely helpless, can't make it work. And I just said, screw this, I'm making my own. And there you go, that's what happened. So I needed a use case. And then, so when the stuff that I rely on starts breaking, I now feel empowered to start fixing that. So.
Yeah, but I would submit to you, and this happened to me also, I think that when you started doing that and you saw how well it worked, and then especially as more capable models came along, you just started coming up with more other ideas.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, the whole thing with Foundry modules and stuff came to me because we were there and we were doing this particular element of the game called a dramatic task. And I have my way of tracking the progress of the task. And my friend Jamie has his way of doing it. And I realized that there's no built-in way to do this. And within an hour, I had a built-in way to do that with Claude. Yeah. And I was like, that's awesome. And then I was like, there's no tracker for mass battles either. Let's make one. And there's no trackers for chases. Let's make one. And so now I have all of those. And so those are the, you know, spoiler alert, that's the Foundry models and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
And that's the kind of thing that's so cool, is because it's low stakes, but it dramatically enhances your experience of things that you enjoy doing.
Totally. And, you know, my players, I have an immediate group of beta testers every Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was like, here, let's try it. They're like, oh, you know, so it's.
But
it's
pretty sober beta testers?
Most of them are. Yeah. Yeah. We actually right. have a rule as of a couple of years ago that where I ask people who are playing not to have more than one drink, because one guy, you know, was getting a little saucy. And when it came to each of us telling each other to f- off in the middle of the game, I said, you know what? This is not right, dude. And he's like, I'm not going to have more than one glass of whiskey when we're having a game. I was like, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. We appreciate your patience. We appreciate you watching. By the way, Claude Code will be editing this episode for me. And that's one thing I meant to say to you, Peter, is because Claude will be editing, we need to be especially careful, because I'm sure there's some stuff that I have hints and tips for it, and I have some things that I want it to do, but I'm sure there'll be things it misses. But, oh my God, what a time saver having this video editing workflow set up. It's great. Everything I've published to our YouTube channel has been edited by Claude.
This should be interesting.
Yep, so. All right, remember.
Tell your friends.